beginning of each month we have a theme, a new theme. This month's theme. Oh, here's my glasses.
It's a long one.
It's two lines from a ghazal of Hafiz. Wash your hands of the cheap metals of existence, like the mature, so that you may find the philosopher's stone of love and become gold yourself. Wash your hands of the cheap metals of existence, like the mature, so that you may find the philosopher's stone of love and be gold or become gold yourself. In a bit I'll pass this out and we can read the ghazal as a whole. But I was asking myself, which we could all ask ourselves, what does Hafiz mean by the cheap metals of existence? I don't think anyone needs to tell anyone else what the cheap metals are. I think we need to examine that for ourselves and ask ourselves that question. Because what are the cheap metals today may not be the cheap metals tomorrow. What the cheap metals are for one may not be for another. For some, lead is the cheap metal. Or iron. For others, it might be bronze or silver. But I think the meaning, the energy of this is really in the second line, which tells us, so that you may find the philosopher's stone of love. And be gold yourself. Actually, I should read the whole ghazal and actually pass it out for all of us. Let's do it in these two directions here. Ghazal is a beautiful form. It allows so much freedom. You can sort of throw anything into a ghazal. Well, of course, it's not that simple. But obviously, it's not a linear process. It's usually a thematic. So let's see. Fareed, would you read to us? Does everybody have a copy? Yeah, look good.
You who are not yet aware become the possessor of awareness. If you haven't traveled, how can you be a guide? In the Academy of Realization, pay attention to the adept of love, so that one day, O son, you may become a father. Wash your hands of the cheap metals of existence like the mature, so that you may find the philosopher's stone of love and be gold yourself. Sleeping and eating has kept you far away from your true level. You will come to yourself when you give up sleeping and eating. If the light of the love of truth falls on your heart and soul, you will be more beautiful than the sun of the skies. For one moment, Drown yourself in the sea of God. Don't think. The seven seas will wet a single hair of yours. From head to toe, you will become the light of God. And you lose yourself on his resplendent road. Once God's face becomes the only thing you see, you will surely become a master of vision. When the basis of your existence is overthrown, empty your heart, for you will also be overthrown. O Hafiz, if your head is set on the climax of the union, be the dust on the threshold of those who can see.
You know, the first really obvious thing worth mentioning is that the subject of this poem is not of this world. Experience that's being talked about, the process that's being talked about, is something quite extraordinary. And it might be that someone could read this and really have no, shall we say, no bearings, not know what, not find meaning. And another person who perhaps has traveled a certain road far enough, long enough, will have experiences to associate with the lines of this poem. Holly, we can easily get you a glass of water. Would you like some water? Take this and Fareed, bring a glass for Camille when you get a chance.
I actually already drank out of this one, so if you get it fresh.
You want another?
Yeah.
It's no big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. We're happy to bring you a glass of water. It's our pleasure.
I don't know why I just started.
Yeah.
Okay. Somebody in the next moment may sneeze. Somebody may, it probably would be me. So we just start right at the beginning. You know, a poem like this is pretty comprehensive. It covers comprehensively a whole spiritual teaching. It's all here. Oh, you who are not yet aware, become the possessor of awareness. I was going to talk tonight about the two different aspects of Suthi practice, meditation and remembrance, and what the difference is. If I don't get to it, it's at the bottom of the page. You can read it for yourself. And how we make a distinction between two very similar and yet distinct processes. The first process is meditation, which is an act of self-awareness. It's listening within. It's coming into your own deepest center in order to move from the false self to come to what we call the essential self, or higher self, the source of consciousness. And it's really an act of self-awareness, of inner coherence, of mastery of attention, and of observation, using the very most fundamental consciousness in our being to be able to observe the contents of our mind, which includes not only our thoughts but our emotions. And remembrance is a step beyond that. It is presumes that awareness, presumes that coming to the foundation or source of your consciousness, but it's also opening up a relationship, a resonance, with what we call the divine attributes, the divine names. And the divine attributes themselves are not just aspects of the divine, they are completely and wholly the divine itself. You cannot, for instance, take the divine's light and say that it is separate from the power of the divine or the love of the divine or the forgiveness of the divine. Each divine name is complete even while being an aspect. So what we call remembrance is that state of resonance with a divine quality or with the divine being itself, a sense of relationship, a sense in which the individual self comes into resonance with the divine presence and is transformed by it. So that's how we distinguish these two functions. So at the very beginning, Hafiz is saying, you are not yet aware. Get some awareness. And if you haven't traveled, how can you be a guide? But then in the second couplet, something very interesting. In the Academy of Realization, wherever that academy may be, it's not of this earth, it doesn't have, you know, doesn't have a government endowment, doesn't have a physical location. In the Academy of Realization, pay attention to the adept of love. And of course, paying attention is an act of awareness too. But pay attention to what? The one who is the master of love, the one who has matured in love. Why? Interesting what he says. So that one day, O son, O child, O son, you may become a father. O child, you may become a parent. Sufis are sometimes called the Ibn al-Waqt, the child of the moment, because they live in the present moment. That's one aspect of it, to be able to live in the present, to be able to be spontaneous, be relatively unconditioned, to be aware, to be not, shall we say, tied down by the wrong kind of self-consciousness, to not withhold yourself out of self-consciousness or fear, to be fully present in the moment, a child of the moment. But the one who matures in that state also becomes the parent, the father, the mother of the moment. The one whose present moment expands. You know, the Native Americans know this well when they say we have to be aware to the seventh generation. Our responsibility goes to the seventh generation. So the awareness, present moment of the mature one goes beyond that narrow, you know, little slice of the present, so-called present. Would you help Yasmin and fix some chairs for them? We can bring some chairs from the front hall too. They're right up there. It'll be fine. Welcome, beloved sisters. Two chairs for you here, wherever. We're reading some Hafiz. Thank you. So what Hafiz is talking about, and what, for instance, Mevlana Jalaluddin Rumi is always talking about, what every Sufi is talking about, is transformation. It's something that is a possibility for the human being. This is very different from what people have typically made of religion. I mean, real religion becomes, when it degenerates, it becomes a collection of rules, a preoccupation with outer things, outer behavior, with beliefs, with correct beliefs as opposed to incorrect beliefs. Well, we all know, I mean, it's all around us in the world, in every religion. At the heart of every religion is an experience of transformation. So the Sufis never forgot this because they lived this. They wouldn't, Hafiz wouldn't be the poet he is if he hadn't lived this, if he wasn't a product of this process, which is fundamentally the transformation through love. Of course we know it's not the love that wants to possess, it's not the love that falls in love with a person. It's as Rumi said, it's the love that has no object. It's the love that simply radiates itself from the heart of the awakened human being, which is your heart. When you're awake deeply enough, when you have washed your hands of the cheap metals of existence. It's a good image, huh? Ablution, wudu. You know. Wash your hands once and for all of trivialities, of cheap imitations. What is false and unreal. So that you may find the philosopher's stone of love. You all know that in alchemy, the philosopher's stone was something that when you were in the possession of it, you could make lead into gold. You had that mysterious elixir that allowed the coarser materials to become refined and transformed. I remember a teacher of ours who said, it was more than 40 years ago now, he said, you need a little gold to make more gold. You ever hear that before, Lizzie? You need a little gold to make more gold. Like one of our teachers said, you can have a whole ocean of milk, but if you don't have the yogurt culture, it's never going to become yogurt. So that little gold, bit of gold, that little bit of yogurt culture, which facilitates the transformation, it's something very small, it's something almost hidden. And absolutely essential for that transformation to happen. Yes, Rebecca.
Well, this one that says, wash your hands of the cheap metals of existence like the mature. Suddenly in my mind, it may be in your book, Living Presence, but it was one of the poems, and I'm paraphrasing, the human said to the water, I'm ashamed. Mm-hmm. To wash my hands, or to wash. And the water said, go right ahead, it's what I do.
You're paraphrasing.
I wouldn't be water if you didn't do this. And so the word mature here, I mean, this line, wash your hands of the cheap metals of existence, like the mature, I feel like crying when I say this thing about the water and the conversation between the human and the water.
Yes. I'll give it back to you in a slightly different way. The dirty one says to the water... No, I'm sorry. It begins with the water speaks first. Water says to the one who's dirty, come.
Who's thirsty, just... Well, go ahead.
You can tell that one later. Okay. Next. Water says to the dirty one, come. And the dirty one says, but I'm so ashamed. And water says, how will you become clean without me? So that too is the nature of this relationship. That too is a description of what I was calling remembrance. That beginning of that relationship that transforms the quality of the soul. Another really important idea in Sufi teaching is the idea of truth, which in our Sufi language is called haq. It means the truth, it means what is most real. And people argue over the truth. Anyone who argues over the truth isn't actually talking about the truth at all. Because truth is not a concept, it's not a formulation. Now here I go, I'm going to say something about it. It's going to be a formulation. Maybe. So what is haq? What is the truth? What is the truth for the human being? Very simply, one way to reflect on this, one way to understand it, is that truth for the human being is our experience of the Divine Presence. Truth for the human being is the experience of what is truly real. So truth for the human being is something that our hearts are capable of with awareness, with consciousness, with a sense in us that's almost like our sense of sight or smell or touch, but it is a sense of unity, which, when it's operating, is extraordinary. Some people may experience it once in many years, maybe at a beautiful sunset when they get themselves out of the rut of their lives and go someplace far away and slow down and get quiet, and bam, suddenly they're touched by something that is not of this material world, particularly the same sunset, which you wouldn't even notice, on one day becomes a radiant experience on another, in another moment, to the heart that's open to that. So there are experiences the human being is capable of, and for the mystic, for the Sufi, for the lover of truth, that experience is cultivated, that experience becomes more of a sustainable state of being. Not as something supernatural, not as something weird or visionary, or not like seeing auras or being able to read minds or see the future, but just as an extraordinary sense of well-being, of as if you were in touch with something beyond all circumstances that couldn't be disturbed. And as a kind of continual undertone of love. As I said, not the love that wants to, that, not the love of attract, that is attraction, not the love that wants to possess, but the love that has no object. The love that is simultaneously the love of the other and of oneself. Well, Hafiz is hinting at this. I mean, he's doing his best, really. He's doing a marvelous job, actually. As somebody who knows Persian, who really understands how beautiful it can be and how deeply it can touch the soul. By the way, feel free to comment, question, add to this commentary. I'm just entertaining us.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
How should a Sophie respond if he sees injustice?
Well, you should work. The word of God is fulfilled in justice. It's very simple. Justice. The teaching is very simple. Change it with your hand if you can, in other words, by your action. Change it with your words if you can't do it with your hands. And if you can't even say it, remember it, be conscious of it in your heart.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything, one way one way a Sufi would see this, excuse me, is that every moment is a teaching for us, for you, for me, every circumstance that we're in. I don't know about things happening on the other side of the world that I can't apprehend right at this moment, that I may learn about through television. I care about those things, but I'm not going to be preoccupied with them because I'm not there to do something. But here, where I can do something, whatever I can do, its circumstances are being presented to us as if this is an educational program. This gets pretty mystical, I must admit. But the sense of it is that every moment is an opportunity for the soul to grow. Through injustice, to speak truth, and to speak for justice. Through suffering, to allow the soul to grow through suffering. Sometimes through the most dire, horrifying conditions on earth, to give birth to just an unexpected impulse of generosity and selflessness. Which again is that love. I mean, we say it's sourced in love because people who do crazy, irrational things that are good, that make no sense in terms of self, in terms of one's own self-interest. There's this beautiful irrationality in the human being, and we call it love. And if there were even no, I mean, okay, even if, let's say we wanted to be completely secular-minded people, let's say we want to be completely atheists, okay, let's do that for a moment. There is no God. There is no eternal soul. There's nothing but you right now. That's all there is. Okay, can you deal with that? Can you be with that? Nevertheless, all the things we're talking about are still true. That capacity of the human being to experience the things we're talking about is it hasn't changed. Now, for certain reasons, because certain beings and certain of us have known reality beyond this body, have known consciousness not limited by shape and form, have known existence outside of time, for us that's empirical. For us that's perception. That's not belief. That is the perceptive possibilities of the human being. And we can give accounts of it. Yes, there's even a science behind it. If you need scientific evidence, there's plenty of that too. But even just right now, that the human being is capable of extraordinary unselfishness, extraordinary forgiveness, extraordinary generosity. Like those mothers in the Truth and Reconciliation courts in South Africa who went up to the torturers of their children and forgave them. And the torturers themselves melted in love. It shows that this love is more powerful than fear or hate. And that fear is the unreality. You want to know what the false self is? It's fear. And out of that grows a lot of things like vanity and self-importance and pretension and role-playing and the need to control and selfishness and violence. And there's a religion of fear, God forbid, but it's everywhere. And there's a religion of love. Religion of fear is not really religion at all. It's a control mechanism. It's a form of conditioning. It's a disease. The religion of love is the only religion that's worthy of the name. Because it is based in reality, based in Hak. He said, truth for the human being, Hak for the human being, is the experience of divine presence. It's kind of mysterious to say that if it's not real for you at this moment. But it is so obvious it's hidden from sight. And the human being who begins with simple practices, you know, it's not like, we're not talking about something that is just the lottery that one in a million people can win. It really is something that is built on very reliable practices. Meditation, remembrance. Why does meditation work? It works simply because it helps us to step back from the superficial, the more mechanical parts of our mind, that our thinking mind, which is great when it's in the areas in which it's intended to be used, it's good. You know, if you're going to be an engineer, you better know how to think very clearly and use your mind rigorously, of course. But you won't apprehend the divine presence through the calculations of an engineer, through the logic of an engineer. Well, there is a beautiful logic to it, but that's still not the experience. So with meditation, we quiet the noise. To put it really simply, quiet the noise. And the noise is both mental and emotional. And probably there are lots of other words we could use if we wanted a whole spectrum of the interior life. But roughly speaking, the noise is mental and emotional. When you allow that to quiet down enough, then you can see what is. Sounds mysterious, sounds stupid actually. But he says something like that here. He says, once God's face becomes the only thing you see, you will surely become a master of vision. Now I know this using metaphor, because Hafiz was well aware, since Hafiz had memorized the Quran, he was well aware of the Quranic verse that says, wheresoever you look is the face of God. Wheresoever you look is the face of God. Now, if you want to be a Quranic literalist, then you also have to be a raving mystic. Because wherever you look is the face of God. Tell that to the Taliban. Tell that to Al-Qaeda. Ask them to explain that to you. once God's face becomes the only thing you see, because you're not just looking at your thoughts, you're not just looking at your desires, your emotional reactions, the trivialities of your contradictory desires and emotions. You've, in a way, cleared at least some of that, not all of it, but some of it. Behind that is, you know, what, using religious language, we call it the divine presence, the divine reality, but really what we mean is a sense of meaningfulness, order, purpose, purposefulness in life. And the more you give up that, the more you don't let yourself be imprisoned in those thought processes that are processes of complaining, judging, you know, resenting, or desiring, wishing. The more you don't do that, the more that's not the primary focus of your inner life, the more you can see that your life has had purpose, that your suffering has had purpose, that, and the more even synchronicities will reveal themselves, fortuitous accidents will prevail. Everyday life will become something quite extraordinary. For one moment, drown yourself in the sea of God. And people are really, I mean, at a certain point, people who are first getting acquainted with the idea of surrender, they hear, well, you've got to surrender, you've got to drown, you've got to die before you die. And it seems terrifying. Really, everything preceding that is what's really terrifying. To be in the control, to be in the hands of the ego is terrifying. Because as Hafiz says, drown yourself in the sea of God. Don't think the seven seas will wet a single hair of yours. It's not what it appears to be. And from head to toe you will become the light of God when you lose yourself on His resplendent road. That's the transformation. You will become, you yourself will become the light of God, which you always were anyway, your consciousness, your intelligence, your very being. It comes, it's like a fountain flowing from a deep inner spring, which is the divine source. And then when the basis of your existence is overthrown, again, it sounds scary, it sounds terrifying. Basis of your existence. You worked so hard to build it, protect it, defend it. It takes a lot of energy. You're using every ounce of your strength to sustain and prop up something unreal. You know, the Quran was right. When it said, the Quran was absolutely true, when it says, وَلَا حَوْلَ وَلَا قُوَّةَ إِلَّا بِاللَّهِ الْعَلِيِّ الْعَظِيمِ. There is no power nor agency except with God. Oh Hafiz, if your head is set on the climax of union, and yes, that phrase, climax of union, is what you think it is. Spiritually speaking, be the dust on the threshold of those who can see. Rumi too said, you know, he said in a quatrain, I am the dust on the threshold of Muhammad. the bottom of the page, I put a little quote from Haji Bektash. A few of you visited Haji Bektash this summer. Remember? Haji Bektash says, great 13th century saint, if you want to address God, say, I cannot endure one moment without you. That's the realization of someone who knows what a waste of time it is, what a waste of time our own daydreams are, compared to living in that impulse of energy and intelligence that is sourced in infinite energy and intelligence, and trusts that infinite energy and intelligence. So thank you, Hafiz. Does this make sense? Can you work with this? Can you find some way to apply this? Can you? We're Americans. We're very practical. We always like to, you know, how can I use this? Some cultures are just happy with the poetry. It's the language of the soul, and that awakens the imagination, and the imagination does the rest. Imagination can transform us. Imagination can transform a coward into a hero. A conformist into...
Suppose that one wanted to understand a little better Sufi philosophy. Is there a book or two that you could recommend?
Probably. I hope there's one here somewhere. Well, I wrote a couple myself, so my unabashed sharing of that. Let's see. I actually would recommend one or another of my own books because they're more practical than the classical Sufi texts. And I might suggest starting with a book called Living Presence, which is really very about its presence as the key to not only spiritual but human development. And then the second book is called The Knowing Heart. And The Knowing Heart is the core idea there is that the heart is our greatest cognitive instrument. It's the heart that can know this existence qualitatively, that can know relationship, can sense the can really be in truly in relationship, and can know what is most important to know. That's why it's called the knowing heart. But in a way, living presence precedes that, because presence is... I'm just going to share with you like a really simple, practical... this is like an engineering statement. I said you couldn't use equations of engineering, but you can in this case. When we talk about presence, we're not talking about some kind of vague, you know, like that actor has presence. But something very concrete that can be described in terms of consciousness, and I'll describe it for you. John, right?
John.
Okay. So, John, part of your being thinks. Me too. I think a lot. Part of us has feelings, emotions. And part of us has physical sensations. Much of the time, we're absorbed in one, primarily in one of those. Rarely are we living in a balanced state where we're aware of all three. Being aware of all three, which you can do right now if I say, as we did in the beginning of the evening, I said, let's be aware of our breath. We can all do this together. Let's be aware of our breath. Let's experience physical sensation in some sensitive part of the body. Let's just take the palms of our hands. Literally. And feel the life, the energy of your nerves, the sense of your flesh and bones, and just the palms of your hands. Aware of your breath. You're listening to someone talk, me in this case. Or maybe you're listening to your own thoughts. Okay, so presence can be aware of thoughts, breath, sensation. And at this moment, too, you can be aware of the state of your heart. relatively calm, relatively whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But whatever it is at this moment, your emotional, your affect, as the psychologist would say. So awareness of emotion, thought, bodily sensation, and if we were moving, if we all got up and walked around the room, being aware of our walking, every step, that would also be within this field of presence. So when you're in presence, you can encompass thought, feeling, sensation, behavior. That's what we mean by presence. It's something very real, very practical, which most human beings in our culture are never taught. Anybody ever teach this? They fumble at it a little bit, you know. And maybe probably in athletics you get closer to it than in a lot of things, or in dance. But you get led away from it in intellectual studies, you know, and you're totally in your head. And people think, oh, you know, I'll become a great academic, for instance, because I will have great thoughts and lots of them, and I'll put them in papers and publish them, and your whole life gets focused on that activity alone. And the being becomes a little bit imbalanced, unless you find a way to balance it with feeling, with something for the body. So presence is that comprehensive awareness. And the human being who can practice that, and literally years, decades of practice, will make a difference. If you want to get some details on it scientifically, actually, I got a copy of this month's Scientific American. There's a pretty good article on the effects of meditation, what the latest science tells us, what they've learned. And some of it reflects even on something like what we're reading here. I'll give you an example. They have found that long-time meditators can sustain awareness with much less effort, with much less brain power than people who are not meditators. Non-meditators, when they're forced to become aware, like they're given a test in a laboratory and they're saying, you've got to be, we're going to do this, this, and this, and we want you to be aware of this. And, you know, they have to really work, and it's like a big effort of mind to be aware. But the long-time, what are called expert meditators, it's relatively easy for them to sustain that kind of awareness. And parts of the brain, the what's called the insula and the cortical parts of the brain have grown. They're actually larger. And something very interesting, the amygdala, which is the center of fear, it has shrunk. There's less fear. And then they found, they trained different groups of people. One group they trained to have empathy for suffering, and the other they trained to have compassion and love, if you can get the subtle difference. Empathy is, oh, I'm going to suffer with you. I'm going to really feel what you're, I'm going to feel your feelings. Love and compassion is different. I'm going to love you. I'm going to be compassionate. But that's different than empathy. They found out that those who are trained in empathy produce a lot of negative effect, negative emotional results and negative physical results. But those trained in compassion and love, neither of that. They even found that it reduces inflammation at the cellular level. That could be good, right? So this is what's going on as we begin to master consciousness. And also that they found and they proved and they verified in the laboratory that what they called expert meditators, which they defined as people with so many thousands of hours of meditation, don't be discouraged, but some tens of thousands of hours of meditation, function differently and are less stressed, less fearful, less judgmental, less confused. And what Hafiz is talking about and what Rumi is talking about goes way further than what they've talked about in Scientific American so far, because it's kind of a baby science right now. They're really doing very basic things. You know, what they can measure in the laboratory is like really baby steps right now. But nevertheless, it's great research. Yes, Adelita.
What did you say the title of the article was? I'd really like to read it.
Yeah, it's a cover story. Meditation. This month. I promise you that Al-Qaeda is not meditating. ISIS is not meditating. Any other thoughts? Briefly, what touched you? What lines touched you in this ghazal?
I had to think. Or maybe not try to think so much for the very last couplet. I don't mean the last line, it's so obvious.
Yeah, the couplet.
Right over my head. Dust on the threshold. The ones that see.
So tell us what you understand.
In a very practical sense, when I am around the folks in our international circle who have been on it a long time, and I want to be near them, and I've said this before, because something rubs off. And I guess if I had to lie down on a carpet to get it.
Well, it's almost the price of entry, becoming nothing. You know, becoming something will not get you through the eye of the needle. And yet, it's mysterious, because those who have passed through nothingness are those who, well, and I think Hafiz says this a few different ways, he says. You will become the light of God. You will become a master of vision. You will be more beautiful than the sun in the skies. You will be gold yourself. You will become a father. So right there, there's five or six propositions that through this transformation, which is a transformation of becoming nothing, in the sense that in that state one has no idea of who one has. Not built a self-image out of one's thoughts of who one is. One is not, you know, constructing an identity. There's no time for it. There's no interest in it at a certain point. At the same time, there's nothing more beautiful for a human being than to live with purpose, to live creatively, but knowing that the best we can do is just to be like a reflector of some infinite unknown. Which is what we learn to increasingly trust. more than our own, what we thought was ourselves.
That thought comes to mind for those of us who experience very strong egos. There's a lot of deconstruction. You know, it's not like one day you wake up and you dust on the threshold.
Right.
There's, I mean, boy, there's a fortress that's been built up.
Yeah.
Begin to see it. Hear it. Tough stuff.
From one perspective, that's true.
I must add that there is far less of it than there was. And when you talk about the beautiful parts of it, those have filled the space that was made. And frequently it's every day. Certainly a lot of days this week. Wow.
Well, Ivula, thank you. We'll let that be our closing words.